This is the podcast of Yale Environment 360. I'm Diane Toomey. And this is a rainforest soundscape courtesy of Maya Lin. Yes, that Maya Lin, the groundbreaking artist and architect most famous for her Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. Lin also describes herself as a committed environmentalist, and this audio is part of her memorial to what is endangered in the natural world.
It's just something I really have, ever since I was a kid, acutely aware of what one species is capable of doing to the environment, and I really believe if I could do anything to try to help, this is something I'll dedicate a part of my life to.
Lin calls the memorial What is Missing, and it launched in 2009 with a permanent installation at the California Academy of Sciences. If the term memorial conjures up images of granite and marble, think again. The installation in San Francisco is a giant listening cone that plays stunning audio and video of endangered species and endangered places. But that was just the start of the project, which is multimedia, multi-format, and multi-location. Maya Lin spoke with me about her What is Missing memorial from her studio in Soho.
What is Missing, I sort of call it my last memorial, but it's a memorial that will basically reinvent. I love rethinking what things are, changing assumptions. So what if a monument, which we normally think of as being singular and static, can exist in many places simultaneously? Then what if they're not all permanent, but sometimes it's a traveling exhibit? One time we borrowed the MTV billboard in Times Square during Earth Day, and for the month of Earth Day, we played 4 or 5 minute videos. We have a website that shows you what's going on with the project throughout, but also is its own memorial. And in fact, the website, I would say, is the piece that pulls it all together. It is a map of the world, looked at from an ecological point of view, but it's a map that allows us to see the past, the present, and by 2013, we'll be beginning to show you plausible future scenarios. It is an experimental artwork, so I don't know if I'll ever be finished with it, and even though I say it's my last memorial, I will be donating to it for the rest of my life. And the goal of it was to raise awareness about the present crisis surrounding biodiversity loss, link it to habitat loss, and not just be about raising awareness about what we're losing, but maybe using it as a wake-up call, telling you what is being done right now by all the environmental groups, all the experts.
For people who haven't been on the website, let's talk a bit about what we can see and what we can hear there. The main feature is a dark map of the world, and it's populated by many bright dots of various colors. And users click on the dots, and where will they be taken?
Well, the dots each tell a story about the natural world. Right now there's a map of the past, and all those dots focus on what we're losing. Now, that is both curated and includes over 600 historical accounts of abundance of the planet. For instance, if you clicked on Manhattan, it would jump up and form 50 dots. I call those wormholes. And so we went for the earliest accounts, written accounts, from the Dutch settlers, where they found that lobsters were 6 feet long, oysters were 12 inches in diameter. And as you follow, say, the Manhattan wormhole, as you get further and further along, the rivers degrade, the abundance of wildlife disappears, but then there's an arc of hope. The 70s come, the Clean Air Act happens, the Clean Water Act, and all of a sudden in present day, in like at the top of the line of dots, you get to seals returning to the harbor, you get to get, nature comes back. That is coupled in the map of the past with anyone can add a memory of something they've personally witnessed diminish or disappear.
The dots that one sees when one goes on the website can be sorted in a number of different ways, and the user chooses that. So by geography, by time, by type of animal. So this is really a self-guided tour,
right?
In a way. And a visitor to the site is not assaulted with conservation messages. What was the thinking behind that design?
Well, part of it is like in many of my works, in fact, probably all of my works, I wanted something that would be subtle. I wanted something you would want to explore. It's very layered, but I don't think there's ever been a place where you could actually look at the ecological history of the planet. And we're inviting experts to come in and say, help us build a timeline wormhole of London, of all the major cities and all the major waterways as well. Like we've done the Columbia River as a time wormhole. I'm working right now on one for the Thames River in London, the Chesapeake Bay. These are places that in their, you know, when settlers first came to the New World, they were so stunned by how much biodiversity and abundance was there. And Christopher Columbus, when he sailed into the Caribbean, he thought he had run aground. He hadn't. He had run into a sea of turtles. I don't think we really wanted to do what we're doing, and I think what Daniel Pauly, when he named the phenomena shifting baselines, and Jared Diamond calls it landscape amnesia, we've actually forgotten how abundant the planet used to be. And I think if I can pique your memory and make you realize how incredible biodiversity was in your own backyard, then maybe it's going to spur you to action, at which point what we also have on the website is something called What You Can Do, simple things each one of us can do in our everyday lives.
There's a marvelous natural soundscape that greets visitors to the site. You have it there, I think, so perhaps we could play a little bit of that.
Okay, I will indeed. We were given an amazing gift through Cornell Ornithology Labs. They donated all sounds and a lot of video. The BBC as well as National Geographic have also contributed. We've created over 75 1 to 2 minute videos, and they're playing continuously at the permanent installation out at California Academy of Sciences. One of the things I know, we are a very visual species, but what if you didn't see it first, but you heard it first? The videos blur out at first, so you actually can't tell what you're looking at. So again, it's this idea that we'll tease you in a little bit and try to get you to operate on a different, almost a visceral level, almost a much more psychological space than if you're just looking at a pretty image. Again, if I can get you to look at something afresh, if I can get you to stop assuming you know what it is, maybe you'll pay closer attention. So, you know, what you're going to hear next is the sound of a common loon, and I'll play that in a second. And we always quote, the factual account we use is always quoted from a scientific source, a journalistic source, and we're almost using pure facts and turning them into a little bit of a poem, almost like haiku. And so that's what you're greeted with at any of the permanent installations, or also they're online. If you sort for core videos, you can actually watch any one of these films. So sound is a way to get you very psychologically and probably very personally connected to a place or a species.
And you've said if you can get people to look differently at the world, perhaps they'll care more about it. So it's that shift in perspective that you're going for.
Absolutely.
You recently added new material to the site. It premiered this past Earth Day.
Right. When you click under time travel and you go to the map of the present, we've linked to over 40 environmental groups. And that list of groups will grow. We're here to invite people in to showcase what is being done.
And there's some good news there.
There's some really great successes. Like, where would we be in this country if we didn't have the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act? So one of the things is to say, to prove that there have been great gains and great successes but we have to legislate it. We have to change patterns of our own consumption and how we're treating the planet. We have to raise awareness and educate that there are many ways in which we can turn this around.
And of course, these success stories will mitigate that doom and gloom factor that some people may feel when they think about going onto a website that's dealing with endangered species.
Right, or extinct species. I think when most people thought I was doing this, they thought it's all about extinct species. It's like, well, not really, because we can't do anything about that. What I'm really focused on is the diminishment not just of individual species, but the quality of the planet itself. And whether you're talking about the fact that 40 to 70% declines have occurred in some of our top songbirds, in our lifetime. Literally, that means that the landscape of sounds we heard as children has changed drastically. So I'm actually going to try to wake you up to things that are missing that you're not even aware are disappearing.
In 2010, as part of the What is Missing project, you traveled to about a dozen countries to ask people what is missing in their personal natural landscape. Tell me a bit about that journey.
I was already planning on a trip with my family, and so I actually decided I got a camera, and as I went around the world, I started to ask people, anyone I would meet, could they tell me what is missing from nature that they've personally witnessed? So you began to see that in certain countries, people said the same thing. So in Mexico, it was the forests. Everyone noticed how rapidly the forests had been deforested, and they were very connected to nature that way. In Peru, it was the frogs. There was a woman who said, when I was a child, I was scared to go out at night because there were so many frogs and that they were croaking so loudly, and now there are none. And you would get to Egypt, in Cairo, someone said, I miss the night sky's darkness. I miss seeing the lights of the stars because I can't see them anymore. Or another person said in India, I remember when the butterflies were all over the puddles in the towns and now we've developed it. People were very, very connected in most countries to nature and to its diminishment. The interesting thing is when I got to Southeast Asia and China, in a way, they didn't have as much of a memory because, say, in China, it has been so long that they actually can't remember more of a primordial nature. It just hasn't been there. Or in Southeast Asia, they had lived through a lot of wars, at which point nature is actually beginning to come back, except for the fact that they are very acutely aware of the rapid deforestation that's happening.
In Vietnam, it seemed like people didn't even understand what you were asking.
Yes, people didn't understand in Vietnam. And in China, they didn't remember. It was very interesting. Actually, a few people in China, in the countryside, could really say, I remember my father telling me we wouldn't be allowed to walk at night because of the tigers.
As part of this memorial, you designed something called the Empty Room, in which videos of endangered species are projected towards the ceiling, I think, and visitors capture the image with a piece of plexiglass. And this premiered in Beijing. I'm wondering if people there responded to this installation in the way that you had hoped.
Surprisingly, I think, the average person who experiences a video artwork is, I think, like 1 or 2 minutes. They were doing anecdotal time counts, and people were staying for like 15 minutes, 20 minutes. They were just watching all these videos. And it's not just species, it's places, whether it's a mangrove forest or a specific place like the Ho Rainforest, which is one of our last pristine wilderness areas in the States. And we were able to make more that focused on China, whether it's the soft-shelled turtle or actually sharks focusing on shark fin soup or many of the animals that are used in traditional Chinese medicine. And again, it was very much making people aware that these animals are on the brink of extinction, and just by not eating it or asking your TCM practitioner, is there a better substitute? You can begin to change the topic.
And certainly it's necessary to reach out to non-Western audiences with these messages because a lot of the world's biodiversity is not in the West.
I do think that we hold, as the top consumers in the world, a huge part of the responsibility because it's our lifestyle that is devouring the planet. But yes, it's my goal is to have a permanent installation in every continent and that there would be more videos in each custom made to focus on issues that are very relevant to that continent. So now my goal in the next 2 to 3 years is to produce enough of the core videos so that we really have a global outlook, and then the idea would be to distribute free to schools.
So for you, Maya Lin, in your personal experience, what is missing?
Oh my God, everything. I mean, specifically, what the memory I gave was of my hometown, which has stayed basically at the same population of 15,000. And I've watched as one mall went in, it was perfectly fine, but it wasn't enough. So they built a second mall, and then the first mall goes bankrupt. Then they build a third mall, and then they built a fourth mall. No, the population hasn't changed. And I watched in my childhood, and I'd go back and visit after college, and little by little, these amazing woods were just gobbled up.
That's artist Maya Lin speaking about her memory of what is missing. The website for the memorial can be found at whatismissing.net, and you can find Yale Environment 360 at e360.yale.edu. That's e360.yale.edu. I'm Diane Toomey. Thanks for listening. The opinions and views expressed in this podcast are those of the guest and not of Yale Environment 360 or Yale University.